Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin. Today's guest is Howie Mandel, who is incredible. I've worked with Howie a couple times now, and throughout the course of a day on set with a guy like Howie Mandel, you'll see people become happier. And that doesn't happen a lot for those of you in entertainment. A lot of times, actors and people in general will just get touchy, kind of bitchy. But Howie has this way of, I noticed, we did this thing with the Impractical Jokers a couple weeks ago, and Howie has this way of being like, how great is this? I mean, look at what we're doing right now for a living. And people just gravitate towards it, and it's really incredible to watch. Even when you're a part of it, because you're like, oh yeah, this is insane that we get to do this for a living. And you can't fake that. Like when you're around someone for 12, 14 hours, there's no way you can possibly fake that level of authentic appreciation. And I was kind of telling him about this podcast. He was just like, yeah, do it whenever you want. I'm down. And people at his level of success, they'll do stuff like that. They'll do podcasts. They'll do things like that. But like, he seemed really excited. And so I followed up with him. And he had watched my 60 Minutes, 7 Days documentary. I mean, the dude is, when you've had a career like his that spanned just decades in all avenues of entertainment and comedy, I'm starting to realize that it has to come from a good place. It has to come from a place of like, just people, just being part of a community that people are like, oh yeah, I'd love to work with that guy again. He's awesome. And as someone who wants a long career, like I want to be in some form of this type of mind thought business, you know, of like how people feel and think and make them laugh. And like, I want to be in that business for a long time. So it's really amazing that I get to be friends and with a guy like Howie Mandel. And so I'm going to play you the interview that I had with him yesterday. And then on Friday, I interviewed Skylar Stone last night. I love, interview isn't even the right word. A talk? Longtime friend, since 2004, I've known Skylar Stone. And he had his own television show, Con, on Comedy Central. He's been in countless, I know a lot of times people say countless, but he's been a working actor for a really long time. You'll recognize him from all kinds of like weird roles. And he's a stand-up. And me and him have been through so much shit together that some of the stories, I mean, it's 2.5 hours long. Like one time he email blasted my phone number to 100,000 people to get back at me for something. He tells the story. It's so funny. Like, they say comedy is tragedy plus time. We have enough time between many of our tragedies where it is hilarious. So that'll come out Friday. And then this one is Howie's. And so it's been a great week for Why Didn't They Laugh? Like, two of my favorite people I got to talk to. And next week I will be with the Impractical Jokers on their cruise. They did their own cruise. How great is that? It's the Impractical Jokers cruise. Some comedians will headline clubs. Some will headline theaters. They're headlining a moving boat. So that is going to be insane. The lineup, like Lisa Lampanelli's on it, Steve Byrne, the Dan Band, Michael Ian Black. It's going to be mayhem. I'm going to wear my captain's hat. Yeah. I don't know when the last time. Oh, yeah, I did a solo Why Didn't They Laugh over break that was, I re-listened to it. It was gibberish. It was kind of interesting at points, but I hadn't slept in 2 days. I'm completely slept now, so this one is much less gibberishy. It's more focused. So when I come back, I'm doing La Jolla Comedy Store the third weekend in January. That's down near San Diego, so come to that. Last week I'm doing Skagit Casino or Skagit or, I don't exactly know how to pronounce that word, and that's in Washington State. It's like 70 miles north of Seattle, I believe. which is cool because I'll go over there with my wife and she'll have a baby shower while I'm saying crazy shit to strangers for a living. And then I'm hosting the Art Director Guild Awards the last Sunday in January. I don't know who they're honoring this year. Last year it was Christopher Nolan and George Clooney presented to him, and it was just awesome. And the year before it was DiCaprio and Scorsese. So it's going to be, those are always so fun to host that shit because you get to do stand-up comedy for creative people that make the movies that I've always liked growing up. And just seeing that everyone has the same type of motivations and loves and desires in this world is pretty cool. February, I'm doing House of Comedy in Phoenix, first weekend in February. And then I have more road dates in February. I just don't have them in front of me. And then March, I'm taking it real easy because that's when the birth of my son will happen. When my wife, the mother of dragons, will proclaim a child has been born in Marina del Rey, California. He will weigh, I don't know yet, something. Okay, before I play the Howie Mandel interview, I got to play something really funny to me. So I pick up my brother. I just did, where was I? For New Year's. Oh, by the way, Happy New Year's, everybody. I just did West Nyack, and my brother lives in Saranac Lake, which is about 6 hours north of New York City, 5 hours. So he's like, brother, I really want to come to the show. So I'm like, all right. So, and I'm excited to see him. So we meet halfway in Albany. He parks his truck. He didn't want to drive the whole way because his truck rattles when it goes like fast for too long. And so I drive back. And I'm recording a good chunk of it for, I'm doing a new video. By the way, thanks for watching 60 Minutes, 7 Days, and then my nutcracker about the worst heckler in history, well, at least in my history. And I'm working on a new one called I Saw the Sign. Not to ruin it for you, but it is just a YouTube video. It's not exactly usual suspects. It's about road signs. But, you know, I'm mixing it in with life. So as soon as I pick him up, we go through Dunkin' Donuts and, you know, my brother is a cunning man. So we do this. This is just a little, taste of the next video. I saw the sign, which would be up either later today or tomorrow. Oh, and I will be doing your songs. I just got another song request and the dude's son is like, it's his birthday either tomorrow or the next day, so I really have to do them today. I have a couple I have to record. So owenbenjamin.com, you can request a song for a loved one. Tell me details about them, birthday or anniversary or flag day or whatever the fuck you're celebrating. But hit me with those like as if it's the world's biggest piano bar. Throw a tip in the jar and I'll make you a song. I'm your piano man. So here is my brother and I going through Dunkin' Donuts.
What do you want? Hazelnut?
No.
Welcome to Dunkin' Donuts. How may I help you?
I want a latte.
Can I get a large latte and a large iced coffee?
Large hot latte?
Yeah.
Whole milk, no sugar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you said a large iced coffee?
Yeah.
Any cream or sugar or black?
Black.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You can pull out of.
Nice.
Black iced coffee?
Yeah, I just need caffeine.
Here, I got it, brother.
Huh? Yeah. Thanks, brother.
If we don't inform you of our survey process before receipt is handed out, free donut. Okay, ready?
We don't what?
It says free donut if we don't inform you of our survey process. Before receipt is handed out.
Nice.
Shit. All right, dude, just distract him. Let's talk about, I want that donut.
Okay. I'll start hammering him about how to get to the highway.
Okay, I was gonna go with football.
Well, let's do a double attack.
Okay, yeah. Look at the stash on that guy.
Do you think it's free donut for both passengers?
That, or? No. Look at, they spelled receipt correctly. How would you spell receipt?
I have no idea how to spell receipt.
But how would you do it? Try.
R-E-C...
Receipt?
E-E-T? No. I know there's some I-E's and the P in there, but I have no idea. It just... It makes no logical sense.
Well, letters don't make logical sense. I mean, none of it is really...
No, but they're like, this is what it sounds like.
When the doves cry? Here we go.
Because Spanish makes sense.
Here we
right?
go.
Yeah, here we go. You're like, Spanish away. I spell great.
How are you doing?
How are
you? Do you know how far... Are we near the highway?
How to get to the highway?
Yeah.
Yep. You're looking for 90 or 87?
We're going... We want to go south.
South of
87 south.
Okay. So you just... You make a left out of here. It's about a mile down, right past a mobile.
Nice.
On your right.
Cool.
You'll see signs for it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Are you Patriots fans in here or Jets fans? What are the fans?
Giants.
Giants fans?
Yeah. Nice.
What do you think about Odell Beckham in the one game suspension?
That was all right. You know, it happens. He had a bat pointed at him. Nothing.
I liked... He did. That's right. He did have the bat pointed at him. I forgot it. That was in practice though, right? Right? Was that practice? Bro, we're getting this fucking time. Was that in practice?
That was right before the game.
Hey, is that donut thing still legit if you don't tell us about the survey and give us the receipt?
Yeah. Did I not tell you?
Boom.
Sorry. Boom. No.
Donuts.
Donut.
What donut would you like?
What do you like?
Glaze is good.
What's your second favorite?
I don't know. I guess chocolate glaze, but we're out.
I'll do a basic glazed.
What is Odell Beckham like? He's got glazed hair.
Yes. Boom.
Dude, full-blown victory. Now I feel bad. Like, I am interested in what he says. He seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Odell Beckham has glazed hair.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, but there's a... You want to go to a comedy show in Nyack tonight, or is that too far? My brother's doing a comedy show. I'll put you on the list.
Oh, yeah?
It's kind of...
I would, but I'm not really good at comedy.
You're...
All right, well, cheers, brother. Thank you.
See ya.
Happy New Year.
He's not good at comedy. Dude, I like that guy.
I like that guy a lot. By the way, saying you're not good at comedy got a big laugh, which...
That's the irony about life, is he, in him saying he wasn't funny, was funny. God, I want to be friends with that guy. Okay, so yeah, here is the interview with Mr. Howie Mandel.
Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny.
All right, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm here with legendary comedian Howie Mandel.
Thank you. I'm not that legendary.
You're legendary.
What defines legendary?
Well, what I love about you is even with all your success, you still do a ton of stand-up.
Then I'm legendary.
Yeah. That's what, because I always
But that's comes out of fear that it'll all end tomorrow, and that's how it all began. So
right.
If that was the fuel for everything, it's also the purest form of everything that you and I do.
Yeah,
and I feel that a lot of stand-ups went into it originally to maybe get a sitcom or become an actor or be seen, or it's a good way to you know, just stay out there and meet people and get the business going. But yeah. I just wanted to be and still want to be a stand-up comic.
Yeah, people view it as a stepping stone. And I love about you is like when I was on Deal With It with you and Theo and everybody, and you were doing like 200 dates that year.
Yeah, I still go out and do a ton of whenever I can. It's the only thing that is its purity. You know, it's my primal scream at the end of the day. There isn't a line to recite, a mark to hit, an edit to happen. Well, maybe we'll talk about that. We got to edit this now, you know, PC is... fucked us all over.
It has
and it's ruining and taking away. I think this is a dying, you know, art form in the purest sense of how the art form, and that it was, you know, try and fail, but if you fail, you that epic fail that you can have on stage,
yeah,
could have repercussions in the rest of your career.
Yeah. How do you feel about comedians being held in the same light for the PC police situation as like
politicians or corporations and stuff like that. Do you think it has major, like a major detriment to society?
I think it all is a major detriment to society. You know, it's there's two sides of this story, and one is that, you know, the internet has given everyone a voice.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, as a kid, we all played broken telephone. So, you know, you'd realize that even if six kids are in a line and you tell something into one guy's ear at the end of the line, it's going to sound different. So, you know, we are all reading snippets and context that don't really exist, but that context is like kindling to a fire, to a fuel, and these things just blow up so huge. And, you know, as a comedian, you know, I've talked about this many times, you know, I was the most inspirational time in my career was in the late 70s when I came out to Los Angeles and I went to the Comedy Store and I watched Richard Pryor. Right.
Yeah.
Virtually right live on the Sunset Strip, which was, you know, an epic movie and concert for Richard Pryor. And I watched him on stage every night, you know, and he was, you know, one of the first people to, you know, besides Lenny, besides Lenny Bruce to cross that line. You know, but he would do things that are that he would. Whoa, I went too far, and I went. But he came from that. It came from a truth. You know, he
was
raised in a whorehouse, and he had a run-in with drugs and marriages and relationships, and he would talk about things that today, if you heard some of the things that didn't make it onto Live with the Sunset, Live from the Sunset Strip, he would have been banned forever. You know, and racism and. You know, I can't even say the title of his album at that time.
Right.
Do you know the title of his album?
No, I'm that N-word, a hard N in
that
there.
N-word is crazy.
Right.
You know, and he was talking about himself. So I'm saying things of even the way he referred to himself couldn't be done today.
Yeah, Roy Wood Jr. had that issue. He was doing Conan, and he has this unbelievable joke with a hard N in it. And it's necessary, and it's a loving joke, and it's about... there's no hate in it. And I remember he was telling me that they said he couldn't use the word. And it's just a really funny experience, like when white executives tell a black man he can't use the word. It's just, I just find that so funny.
But everybody has become police, you know, and they call it social media. Well, the fact is, you know, that media, you know, if you're a reporter for The New York Times, you're the media. If you are, you know, a reporter on television, you're the media. If you work for CNN, you're the media. Fox, you're the media. If you're sitting at home in your underpants with Twitter, all of a sudden you've become the media.
Right.
You used to need a fedora with a card on it that said press. Now you need, you know, an iPhone and...
a Wi-Fi connection.
And that's it. And you are the media.
And your mom's still letting you live in her basement.
Like, and you can create an uproar. And then somebody like Gilbert Gottfried loses a whole campaign.
I can't imagine. It's like, because humans are nuanced. I think the problem is that, the thing that makes brands strong, like Starbucks, every Starbucks coffee is the same. And I like that because I'll be in Cincinnati or Tampa and I'm like... that's a Starbucks coffee. But now we're applying that to human beings where it's like, you have to always have this opinion, this opinion, this opinion, and now you're this brand. And it's like, but humans don't think and feel that way.
But, you know, I remember when I was a kid, a philosophy that a lot of little kids live by, and that was sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Right.
But now... names are the most, you know, disastrous things that can come your way.
Yeah.
And they could cause the most damage.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how you know, explosive a word is.
Right.
And you and I are in the business of words.
Exactly.
And we're also in the business. What I loved about this business when I came out and the reason I keep doing it, circling back to the beginning of this conversation, is because there were no boundaries. I understand when I'm on America's Got Talent that this is a family show and I watch what I say and I watch my language. I understand when I'm, you know, doing a corporate gig for the church that I will, you know, watch what the material is. I also understand that there are times when I'm trying out and I'm on stage and I'm just at a comedy club after I do a concert and I want to try, you know, material that maybe I can't, whereas I was a lot more brave 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I would try something and go into the toilet and be so offensive. But now I'm afraid that somebody has an iPhone and they're going to record it and they're going to send it or they're going to be offended. And there used to be a safety net, and that was, I was just joking.
Right.
But you're not allowed to. But I'm just joking. Yeah. But you're not allowed to. But just joking is what I do for a living.
They become the bullies. They become, because I know that they're wrong, because I've always had this, I can't stand bullies. I always like to stick up for people that are getting messed with undeservedly. Like, that's one thing that I love about comedy. And when now I'm starting to be bullied as I'm sticking up for people because of like some word that makes someone feel unsafe, I know they're now the bullies.
But they are the bullies. But yeah, they're the bullies for a sad reason. And the sad reason, and that's what trolling is. You know what internet trolling is.
Of course.
Trolling are lonely people who have no personal engagement. These are people who don't have great relationships. And the only way to get engagement is if they say something that seems somewhat like a bully.
Right.
They've engaged you.
Right.
You know, if they could say something that will make you tell them to go fuck themselves after,
yeah,
then they've engaged you. You know, if they texted you and said, I saw your show last night, it was really nice, you're never going to say anything.
Right.
If you got a fan letter, or that
cortisol.
Was good.
It's the cortisol good. In your brain right. makes you act.
Yeah. So they want to get a reaction.
Right.
And if the reaction doesn't come from you, it's going to come from the nation online. So this is how lonely people...
Yeah.
Engage, and this is our new form of engagement, which is trolling. But there is some collateral damage, and that is the inability to feel the freedom that we fight for in this nation, and that's the freedom of speech.
And I like how you're talking about the corporate gigs versus like doing a set at a, because when I played sports, they'd say it's not just your name, it's your family name, and then also the town name on your jersey, and I understood that. So then. But when you're like in a fight, it's just you.
Right.
So it's like when I'm doing a corporate gig, I will make fun of Korn for an hour if you pay me. Like, right. I'm down. That's great because it's your name on my jersey. But when I'm just doing a show myself, it's just my name and I'll say crazy shit and that's on just me. And people have to start understanding that. Like, I'm only representing myself in this moment, not, you know, but then when you're like when I was on like TBS or something and it'd be like, well, this is what we need out of you. I'm like, yeah, because now your name's on my jersey too. So it's like that has to be.
Well, the more success one garners, the more restraints.
Right.
You know, the more you are a brand. But I still look for those. You know, I still tour, you know, hundreds of dates a year, and I'll do concerts and theaters and casinos. And if I'm not flying home that night, I try to find out where the comedy club is.
That's
and
so
I
awesome.
Love to wander in at midnight, 1 a.m, when there's 5 people left there, half of them are drunk and not paying attention, and they've been comedied out. And I feel that a certain freedom that I used to feel in the 70s that that you don't feel when people have paid for a high price ticket or paid you a high price to be at a corporate event or a casino. Those are my favorite loose moments when I feel that there's such intimacy, so I can see if somebody's holding up a phone and recording me.
Yeah.
You know, I can see everybody in the room, and I can just kind of stretch my comedic muscles.
But the one good thing, though, is there's so much shitty trolling now that people forget pretty fast. That's the only thing about it. There's now so much that it's like, there could be a video where it's like, look at this.
Well, my friend Gilbert Gottfried doesn't get that whole campaign back.
That's crazy. I can't believe that happened.
So you're saying how fast they forget. It depends how how bad whatever the ramifications of what you say are, you know, how long. Yes, people do forget.
Right.
But another kind of effect of it being online is the fact that it always exists.
I know, and there's something about stand-up with the elevated heart rate that'll make people say stuff that they don't... Like the Michael Richards meltdown, like, I saw that as a comic, and I was like, oh, he's just kind of sucks at stand-up right now. Like,
right.
I'm not thinking he's making a racial proclamation. I'm thinking that he's so nervous and scared that he's saying just crazy shit.
Right.
And so I think that a lot of people now are making judgments in fields that they have no expertise in, where it's like...
But because that was recorded for prosperity...
That was crazy.
It ruined him.
I know.
And it not only ruined him professionally, it ruined him personally. I think that he's fucked up royally because of it.
And I feel really bad for him because it's like...
And in no way condone the words he used or whatever. But
it's the fear. He was like... What he's like? What he wanted
he
to shock his
direction.
Way? Yeah, he was throwing TNT at Stone. Just I'm gonna say crazy shit.
And we've all said crazy shit.
Totally.
Maybe not those words.
Right.
But we've said things that are embarrassing and done embarrassing things and things that weren't funny and didn't get a laugh. We've offended the woman in the front row who's walked out and demanded her money back. It's happened to everybody who's a comic. The point is that it's not. It wasn't a political hot button of the moment.
Yeah.
And it wasn't recorded. And it wasn't shared, and it wasn't reported on.
Right.
So we survived it.
And it's funny how people can just have the hot buttons of the moment. Like, I saw a video of myself doing stand-up in, like, 1999, making fun of Catholic priests. And there was, like, this air of, like, don't say that. And now it would be seen as hacky because everything's been broken.
Right.
And at the time, you know, it was like, wear a dress, light a candle, drink some wine. These little kids are on dates. You know, I'm doing a joke like, you know,
right. And
they're like, it's a funny joke.
Right.
And they're like, it hadn't broken nationally yet. So it was like taboo. And then I would get shit for it. And now if I did that joke, it'd be like kind of funny. But everyone's like, yeah, we get it.
Well, in the comedy world, there's a question that one asks, and that is too soon.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And my analogy from that is it's never too soon.
I agree.
If you could be on it. Now, the you know, it's like Russian roulette, you know, is it too soon to pull the trigger? You know, you want to pull the trigger because if you're the first one out, you know, and you have, and that's why it's called a sense of humor. You found the humor before anybody else did.
Yeah.
You want to be the first one out, and you don't want to be the hacky one where everybody's already making a joke of it. So there's this great balancing act where you're on it.
Right.
And you don't want to be too far away from it.
Yeah.
So you want to be too soon, but not too soon.
Right.
But what is that?
Yeah. It's all instinct.
But if you're sitting around a table with a bunch of comics, there's never too soon.
Oh, no.
And that's the purest form of fun in our business, is the things we can't say. I always wanted to get together, you know, they've never been able to do it. They've never been able to, like, just push the envelope and said, hey, there's nothing we can't do. I know Bill Maher did a show Politically Incorrect, but it's not really politically incorrect.
Right.
But that concept is wonderful.
What do you think it is about people that makes them offended by things? Why can't they just say, I don't want to hear that. I'm just going to walk away. Why do they have to drop such a hate bomb for that person if it's just words?
Because as I just said a minute ago, I think words have much more effect than people give credit to. You know, as a kid, we said sticks and stones will break bones, but names will never hurt us. I think that words, in every way, you know, you and I make a living with words.
Right.
Just words. That's all we do. We don't, you know, we're not, we create, we put them in an order, and we create references to what they're about. So hopefully people have of like mind kind of are tickled by our words. You know, it's like tickling, you know? But it also tickles, as much as it tickles your funny bone, it could tickle your ego. It could tickle your weakness. You know, if you don't feel good about yourself, or, you know, and it's a good way to lash out, you know, you're standing for something.
Right.
You know, if you feel good about yourself, nobody can really make fun of you. I mean, they can make fun of you, but if you're okay, you know, but if you're a little bit, you know, if you feel uncomfortable with your weight.
Yeah.
Personally uncomfortable with your weight. And somebody says something about a fat person. Because you are personally uncomfortable, that fat word hits a hot button for you. And you go, well, you can't just make fun of fat people.
Right.
You can't just do that. And, you know, I'm on the cusp of that because I deal with, you know, personally, mental health issues myself. So I'm sensitive to how people respond. But my best weapon and my best survival skill was to laugh, joke, and find humility in things. And I think there's not enough humility in our world. Like, you can't say you're going to a psychiatrist because I'm fucked up and I can't cope. And not only can you not say it, but you can't really laugh about it.
Right.
But you got gotta laugh about it.
You gotta laugh.
Otherwise, you're gonna cry about it.
Right.
But that's what the world does. The world cries about all this shit that can be perceived as sensitive topics. And whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's weight, as a comedian, those are all the things you're
gonna. That's all the good stuff.
And you're always laughing at, you know, comedy does come from a dark place. Has always come from a dark place, regardless of what you're looking at. When you look at old movies and somebody gets a pie in the face, you're laughing at their embarrassment. Something bad happened.
Right.
They're dressed up. They got a pie in the face. A clown coming out of a car and falling down. You're laughing at their misadventure.
And his shoes don't fit.
But that, or he looks stupid. You're laughing at them because they make themselves look stupid. They've you know, capitalized on that and exaggerated that. But that's what you're laughing at. When you tell a joke, the two guys walk into a bar, something horrible is going to happen to one of the guys, and you're laughing at somebody else's misfortune. So when somebody points out something that really happened in their life or something that's happening in the room or something that's happening in the psyche of the world right now, people are very sensitive. And we have to put it in context. You know,
well, that's the thing is context.
He's trying to make you laugh at it.
Because for me, it's the aggression against a word versus an intention. That's what. Because my dad's a rhetoric professor, so I've had this since I was a kid. Like, he'd ask me, like, we do, like, little mind games. Like, what's worse? I'm just making this up. But it'd be like, what's worse, saying Mexicans shouldn't be allowed in our country or Spics are fine, they're just like us? Like, what's worse? What's the one's an intention of exclusion and the other is an ignorant person with a better intention? Where it's like, what if you're in an area, like, for example, my piano.
But that question cannot be answered because what you learn as a comedian is to each their own.
Right.
Now, if it is, and I believe it's intention. Believe if you don't intend to be, and you don't mean to be mean and ignorant, and or if you're just ignorant and your intention is not negative, then you're a good person. And you know what? That's your education. That's your, that's fine. But I know people that would take offense to any one of, and they do, to any of those. So what do you, I have this discussion with my friends all the time. And I said, you know, I make a choice to be in the media.
Yeah.
You know? And if I'm making that choice, I believe that life is a game, you know? And you know, like in chess, if somebody makes this move, then you have to make that move. Or if you're playing Monopoly and they land on you, you know? So I stay away from those kind of, when I see what my audience is, I will stay away from those kind of words that could possibly inflame, even though my intention is not to inflame.
Right.
You know, because I know that, you know what, if I said something like that, I'm probably not going to get a sponsor.
Yeah.
You know? Is that a bad statement? It's a bad statement because you're going to offend people. Are people wrong in being offended? No, you're never wrong if you're offended.
Right. See, like people like wordsmiths like us would never say that. I'm referring to, like, I come from a town where the average house is $25,000. Like, they don't.
You're coming from the real world.
Right. So a lot of people don't, like, they're raised with words and they don't. A perfect example, my piano teacher was transgendered in 1991, like, became a male. And I was raised with two college professors, so I knew all the Huffington Post lingo of today.
Right.
But I would know people that would be like, oh, Larry's cool, even though he's a tranny. That's fine, as long as he likes the Bills. You know, it's like, so you have to process the intention of people versus, like, because then you'll see this ostracization of people based on that. Now, like, it's almost like a fetish where it's like,
but humans are colonial. You know, by nature, most people, you talk about the kind of people you grew up with.
Yeah.
Most people, you know, as in my travels now, and I'm older now, somebody will pick me up who's in their 50s and say, what's California like? They've never been on an airplane in their 50s. And most people live amongst like-minded, like, you know, income, like whatever their industry is. You know, it's a mining town and everybody lives amongst those. So they're not worldly. So their point of reference, you know, they may make statements like you just made, and they don't mean, there's nothing bad about it, but they don't know. We speak to a larger group than just our close friends. And you and I may say, go over some material when it's not being broadcast, when we're not on a podcast, that we know you could never do in front of an audience.
Right.
Because we're aware of how it's perceived.
Yeah.
But when you don't get outside of your circle, you're aware of how everything is perceived in your little world. And as far as you're concerned, your little world is the world. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've walked in, even you talk politics. You know, you can go one night in one club or one theater and mention Trump and you get a certain response. And then one flight later, you get a totally different response. But the people in whatever those that response is believes that's how the world is swaying. This guy's going to win. This guy's behind. You know, they think that's the world.
Yeah.
And I go, well, you know, it's kind of what the internet opened up for me is like any subject that happens in the world now. I get to read, you know, CNN, Fox, New York Times, the Israeli paper. I can see that it's so much fun to read one event coming at you from nine different points of view.
We're almost like point of view connoisseurs. That's what a comedian is.
It is.
It's like that's why all these issues I think people are flipping out about, because like one night I'll be in San Fran. Everyone's against guns. Then the next night you're in Montana. Everyone's for guns.
Right.
And the difference is in Montana, there are wolves. You know?
Right.
It's like, but if you don't start like thinking, like if you're just talking on Twitter as if you're on the same table with the same background, you're now dealing with people that are horribly offending your way of life.
But there is a common ground. So
right.
In San Francisco, they'd want the government to put more regulations on gun ownership, right? Which some would see as the First Amendment, but they also want the government to recognize gay marriage. But if you go to Montana, they want the government not to have gay marriage. I don't know if that's Montana, but there are states
right,
where it's
yeah,
not.
Exactly.
But we want to be able to own our guns without. So they want their freedoms. They just want their specific
freedoms.
Yes.
Right. That's so interesting. I want to do a sketch where I'm a Third Amendment guy, where I'm not quartering any soldiers. You know, like one of these like amendments that's a little like offbeat that no one cares about.
Right.
Where it's like my wife's like, oh, my brother's gonna stay over. It's like, is he still active Marines? Not in our home. I'm a Third Amendment guy.
Oh, that's hysterical.
The bigger you get in your career, like the bigger the audience is it? Do you still ever experience jokes not working, or do they always just kind of be like?
No, they don't work. I experience, and I love that. And what my formula for me personally, and I found it by accident, was honesty. And the honesty of, and humility, and maybe that's because I have mental health issues, and, you know, I share that.
Do you think anyone doesn't?
No, I don't think anyone does.
I think
doesn't.
Everyone has something.
But they always think, right. You know, I'm, you know, and that is my, you know, my soapbox, and I go and speak on Capitol Hill about it, that, you know, it's amazing that mental health is not part of our regular curriculum.
Right.
You know, we take care of dental health, not mental health. People go
so
to the
true.
Dentist to go get an x-ray, but God forbid you should go and talk to somebody. And not because you have a titled ailment like I do, like OCD or anxiety. What about just coping with the pressures of a relationship? What about just coping? I was talking to a friend yesterday whose husband got diagnosed with cancer. The doctor comes in and says you have cancer, but nobody else comes in and says, how can you cope with it? And it's just coping skills. Maybe they're just a breathing exercise you need so you can cope with it. The honesty and the humility, you realize where they can relate. So if a joke, if something that I say just totally flops, I recognize that and kind of underline that and talk about that and talk about how I'm feeling about that.
Yeah.
And that moment in itself becomes a great comedic,
right.
Real,
being in the moment.
Relatable moment. And that's what happened to me when I started comedy. You know, I walked out on stage and was not prepared. I was not anybody who did homework, and preparation was not my calling. So when I realized I had nothing, I was very hyper, very nervous, very scared. As people started giggling at my hyperness and fear, I started asking, what are you laughing? And that became my... I had nothing to do. I carried rubber gloves with me because I didn't want to touch things because of my OCD. I had nothing to do. I pulled it over my head and blew it up. That became a signature piece for me.
Yeah.
In the 80s, blowing a glove. It came out of nothing. It's not a piece of material. It's not something you sit down and write and think of as a closer. It became a closer. So I'm just really honest. And in those most uncomfortable, honest moments, I find that That's like the roller coaster. I love big rides, and I think comedy is like going on a roller coaster ride. And the scarier and the closer you think you're coming to death or being humiliated, the better the moment is.
Yeah.
And those moments, and I've talked about some of those moments, and I wrote a book a couple of years ago, but like we've all talked about how if you're up on stage in front of thousands of people and one person is not into you,
you focus.
It becomes about making that one
person. It's like the internet trolls the same way. It's like, what's wrong with this? Why don't they like
me? I remember one particular night, this guy's not even looking at me. He's sitting in the front. He's not even looking at me. He's not paying it. It doesn't seem like he's paying attention. He doesn't seem to be reacting right. And I go, so I just, in the middle, I stopped and I went, you, with the blue sweater, the guy with the blue sweater there, you know, fuck, I'm right here. You're not fucking looking at me. You're not fucking looking at me. I've been up here for a fucking hour. I mean, just look at me. You don't have to laugh. Just look at me.
Right.
And the lady beside him says to me, he's blind.
No way.
Yeah. And you can feel the air get sucked out of the room. I could feel my heart drop into my nutsack. I mean, it's just the most appalling. If you just want to hide and just shoot yourself in the head, that was the moment. And I thought, I'm in this dark moment. How do I? This is going over the peak into the big drop of the roller coaster of humiliation. And I said, I gotta own up to it. I said, this is horrific. This is horrific. I think I've just. This may be the end of my career, but I'm going to ask one more question. Why would you pay for a ticket for the front row for a fucking blind guy? Why wouldn't you put him in the balcony? You could tell him he's in the front row.
That's hilarious.
But this could have gone either way. The audience finally, they jumped on my horror train, and everybody was laughing. That's a waste of fucking money. But out of that moment of it not working and funny, you know, those uncomfortable. And if that didn't work, I don't know where I would have gone from there. And, like, there's been, like, a lot of moments like that. And the more you do, the more moments you have of that. But even the moments when you die, when something technical bad happens, if you could share that and you could be honest and you could live, and I believe this is a good. It's my formula for life. It's about living in that moment. If you could just live in that moment, then you're okay. Because ultimately what we want to do with our audience to get a laugh is just to get them to relate to us. You know, some people aren't ticklish. You just got to find that spot.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's got a spot. You know, if it's under the arm, you know, are you ticklish? No, not really. You could try. You're going to hit that mark. And if you could say, I'm trying hard and this isn't going well for me, people kind of appreciate it and relate to it. There's nothing better than discomfort and awkwardness. That's why I love Hidden Camera so much.
Yeah. When you were talking about, do you think you have to have some sort of mental health, quote unquote, issue to be good at anything? That's my theory. That, like, sometimes my wife and I will get in arguments where she's like, why, like, you'll grind at something. You're obsessive. Like, I do. I'm a very obsessive person. I'm like, yeah, that's why I can play Bach. Like, you think that I played it 50,000 times.
The answer to your question, I would say no. I would think that, you know, whatever hand is dealt to us, it behooves you to use that.
Yeah.
You know, because I personally, you know, I'm the national spokesperson for adult ADHD. You know,
right.
So I can't focus, and I probably couldn't learn Bach, you know, or spend enough time, but. You know, the ability to be able to maybe balance a couple. These aren't gifts. These, you know, and if they are gifts, I would love to return them or re-gift. But.
Yeah, but that's so funny. It's like you're so funny. You don't think that comes from a little bit of that?
But your perception is I'm funny. And it's your perception of what I'm saying right now. But the truth of the matter is I'm not any different than I was when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, I had no friends, and nobody was laughing at me for the same kind of behavior, for the same kind of thoughts. You know, it's context again.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody who loved the awkward moment for a teenager is not a good moment. The teenager wants to fit in and be like everybody else. I couldn't. I didn't. I don't have a GED. I got asked to leave school. You know, I was interested. I couldn't focus. I couldn't sit. I would, and I had anxiety and fears and OCD. Which, you know, I'm in my 60s now, was not really recognized when I was in my 50s. So it's context. It's very funny because I had no friends in school, but now people see me. He said, I went to your high school. You were so funny.
So funny.
But you didn't, nobody laughed. And I don't hold that against them because I didn't fit in the world. And they don't have to get me. I just have to find my way of manipulating. I feel like the luckiest guy in the world that I found a platform where I can, you said, do you have to have these issues to be, you know, it just so happened that my issues and my sensibility are working for me, and I have found an industry where it fits. I think that the key is just don't give up.
Yeah.
There is a place for everyone,
right.
And I think I live by the Rolling Stones songs. You know, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need.
Yeah.
And you think you want to be rich, or you want to be successful, or you want to, you just, those are, the word want is not as strong as the word need. We're all doing what we need to do. We're all going as far as we need to, you know. If you need to reach something, you're going to climb a ladder, even though it's really scary. You'll get it if you need it. If you want something, but you're too afraid to climb the ladder to go up and get it, you may want it, but you don't need it.
Right.
If you needed it, you would climb that ladder. So, you know, I needed this. So I stood there in possible humiliation in front of thousands of strangers and still am open to public ridicule, you know, which kills me. Hurts me. I read everything. I read every negative tweet. I read how much hate there is. I'm aware of it. That's the way my psyche leans. When I sell out two shows at Radio City Music Hall and it's 14,000 people all in one night in New York coming to see me, I'm aware that there's 10 million people in New York and 9,985,000 people decided not to buy a ticket.
Right.
So, you know, I give myself a hard time, and you could say that's what drives me to have any of my success. But truth be told, I think we're all driven equally to achieve what we need.
Do you think that's why Canadians and, like, I'm from upstate New York, do you think people from cold climates sometimes have a stronger sense of humor? There's funny people all over the world, but I've noticed like there's no like Maui funny bone.
I think it's also because we're from the Northeast and there's just more per capita, more people.
Really?
Per capita. I don't know that weather has anything to do with it, but if it did, and
just
you wanted
that miserable
and you wanted to make the argument.
10.
Well, it's the misery of cold climates is, you know, 10 months of living in a snow-packed, you know, gray area. In order to do anything, even get food, forage out for your food, you've got to bundle up and fight the elements.
Right.
So you are trained to you live in discomfort.
Yeah.
We all want to be comfortable. We all just want to be complacent and happy and warm. That's what we want. So maybe if there is an argument to be made for your philosophy, maybe it's
my
the
absurd
fact that
philosophy.
What?
My absurd philosophy. Yeah,
it is a philosophy, but maybe it is. Maybe there is a study in that people. It was harder for me to go out because I had to put on snow pants and boots.
Yeah.
And a hat and wear gloves just to go out. Whereas here in California, I can just open the door and go outside.
Nice.
And it's very funny. And as we speak and do this podcast, apparently I'm on storm watch. You know, it's raining. Where
yeah.
I come from, it's just raining. This is not Stormwatch, but this is break-in bulletin time, and they have low shots of camera angles from puddles.
Yeah.
You see that?
That's
you
hilarious.
Know, I had like 30 snow days a year where I come from. You know, this is not a natural disaster. This is a rainy day.
Just a rainy day.
But in this community and this world and this geographic area, this is a big obstacle. So if you come from a place where obstacles are less or they're not even considered obstacles, maybe it makes you go after things in life differently.
Agreed. I like that. Any final advice for people?
Yeah, it's not mine. It's Nike's, and that's just do it. And just do it. Just do anything. And, you know, whether it's standing in front of a group of strangers acting like an idiot, just do it and don't think. I don't like thoughts. I mean, thoughts are the death of me anyway. That's why I'm medicated to kind of curb some of the thoughts that go in my mind. But nothing good comes out of overthinking. Nothing good comes out of thinking. Just do it.
Nice.
And it'll happen. And whether you do it and you go in the wrong direction and you just do it and you walk into a wall, you know what, you know, the next time you're going to turn the other direction because there's a wall there. So even if you do it wrong, you learn something. Just do it. And that's what I do on stage. That's what I do in my career. That's what I try to do in my life. It's not our natural instinct, but I think that we have to
go against our natural instinct. I think we have to do things that hurt, that feel uncomfortable, that just because in the moment we need to do that, just do it.
I love it. Howie Mandel, thank you so much. So awesome, man.
Great to be here.
Yeah, you're the man.
Well, great to have you here. I'm where I am.
All right, cool.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.